Thank you, Jonathan. Now, please help me welcome our speaker for this evening, Zach, who will share their story and their recovery with the group.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Zach, and I am an addict.
Hi, Zach.
My sobriety date is the 19th of December, 2015, so I have just over 3.5 years today. And this is really kind of an interesting moment for me personally to be kind of having this experience of being asked to share. For a little bit of the backdrop, I spent my first 9 months in sobriety in inpatient treatment programs. I then moved into a transitional housing program specifically for people who had either mental health or substance use issues, and I lived there for 18 months. I've always been a practitioner of the more help is the help that I need. And so in addition to a sponsor that I've worked with over the past several years and the support that I get in these rooms, I've always kind of, at least in the beginning, been in the habit of personal development and support from a variety of different organizations and philosophies that have been beneficial. The reason why I'm starting off with this is that in recovery, as my life has gotten bigger and better, and the gifts that I have been given have grown far beyond what I ever thought would be possible, part of that's kind of fallen to the wayside. And it's something that I've recognized for some time now. It's not a new concept or a new phenomena or anything along those lines. And it starts with small things, right? You get busy, work picks up, you get asked to do stuff, you start kind of putting stuff on the back burner. And so with the past several months for me, really the past 2 months for me, have kind of been the coming to Jesus moment, for lack of a better term, about the fact that, you know, in small ways, various aspects of my life have not been working for me. To put that in a larger context, of where I've kind of come to this recognition and this place and this understanding and have started to put steps in place to address these issues now that I've like recognized them and acknowledged them. This Monday, I got a Facebook message from someone who I had met once who informed me that one of my best friends from another life at this point had been shot twice at 6th and Mission about 2 weeks ago, and has been in the ICU unit of San Francisco General Hospital since. And really kind of, it's not what happened that's really kind of important or what I'm trying to draw attention to, it's my response to that. And given the fact that all of these things that I just said are true, right, about where I'm at when I get this news, my first response is to always kind of cycle through the shock and then run a million times in my head the list of things that I feel like I should be doing. And the answer is I can't do anything, right? That's the overwhelming answer, is that I can't do anything but sit and make peace with it and kind of hope for the best. The added dynamic was that since there is still an active SFPD investigation, this was someone who I was not able to see even after I got the news because of security protocols that they have in place. So fortunately, he woke up today and I was able to go visit him. I had this moment where I'm in the same room of the same hospital in the same, literally the same room that I was 8 months ago when we had another member of our fellowship who tragically lost his life. And it's been a really kind of reflective time over the past couple days, and I've come to a couple of conclusions. The first was that, like, everything that I have to be overwhelmingly grateful for. You know, I don't know the particular details that led my friend to where he found himself, but I've certainly stood alongside him in the same places that it's happened and done the same things that he was doing. So that was the first thing I came to realize once I got past the initial shock. The second chance is that, you know, this person's not an addict. They've got other issues that they're going to need to tackle if they want to live a better life and a more meaningful life. Some of those translate into our issues here in these rooms. But the moment I had was, you know, this person shouldn't be alive right now. two collapsed lungs, died on the table, brought back. And what we do here in these rooms is we really kind of manufacture miracles. And while I'm thinking about the loss that I experienced last year, I also had a moment where I was struck by the tremendous hope of a potential opportunity for a young, I mean, he's 23, for a baby, you know, just a young man to kind of have that opportunity and that gift when he really shouldn't. You know, people don't survive those sorts of things. And so all of that kind of led me into a place later in this week, this is my past 5 days, where I've moved past the kind of initial shock and moved into, like, things are so good in my life right now. Things are so good in my life. The fact that I can go there and actually be useful and helpful to his family and his loved ones is not something I would ever be capable of doing had I not found these rooms and found this program and this fellowship. And part of, you know, some of you have, this is not the first time you've heard these words come out of my mouth. And that's because I leaned on people in this room. And I leaned on people in this room when I needed to. All that being said, you know, I'm gonna get into a little bit more of what the traditional format is, which is not very different from a lot of folks. There is instability. My childhood was a mixed bag of, like, really loving, caring, and supportive people and some really kind of toxic and violent individuals. I got in trouble at an early age. Consequences are something that started for me when I was probably 12 or 13 years old. At school, with the law, I was 13 the first time I spent a night behind bars. It didn't take me much longer to continue that a couple more times before I even turned 18. And, you know, the whole time there was physical abuse, there was verbal abuse, there was sexual abuse, there was all of these sorts of things that were happening that culminated when I was 15 and my mom passed away in a car accident. And, you know, that was like the light bulb moment for me. That was the, like, I no longer want to feel, I no longer even really know who Zach is. I became a liar and a manipulator at an early age because it was a tool to keep myself safe. And so as I lost myself and kind of chameleonized myself to adapt to whatever I thought was going to achieve the best outcome for me for whatever situation I was in, combined with, you know, decades at this point of just running from immensely painful experiences that I had no coping skills to handle, I kind of naturally turned to drugs. And while I do have a drug of choice, I also like to refer to myself as a garbage can addict because I will really kind of put whatever you put in front of me. I will seek things out in order of preference, but I will not turn anything away. I'm sure some people can relate. And so what did that look like? That looked like, you know, 17, 18, 19, I had my own place. I had the flashy things. I had 4 different cars at this time period. I had a 6-figure salary. You know, I was the running around San Francisco and Oakland, eating at, like, some of the nicest places, shopping wherever I wanted. And that all disappeared. You know, that all disappeared. I was, like, the most financially successful I ever was when I was, like, 19 years old. And also the most profoundly miserable and lonely that I was at that time period too. And again, I kind of turned back to what I had been turning to for a long time. So that led rapidly into the progression of my disease. What does that look like? That looks like homelessness. That looks like not showering for weeks. That looks like random acts of violence that regularly happen when you're someone who does drugs and lives on the street. That looks like getting 5150 by the police on your 21st birthday and spending your 21st birthday at John George Psychiatric Hospital. What else does that look like? You know, that looks like when I walked into these rooms, I weighed 107 pounds and had 22 cavities. That's what addiction looks like for me. And there's someone in this room who knows exactly what that looks like. So what took to get me from there to here, right? I like to say that the really kind of codependency and happy accidents. I didn't seek recovery. I didn't want recovery. I didn't want to change. I didn't believe I deserved to change. But what happened was I was in a relationship during this time period, and that relationship was basically given an ultimatum about how we were going to proceed in our lives and me not wanting that to end, I figured, what the hell? I'll give a 30-day program a shot. I kind of really went in with the intention of doing the 30 days, pleasing, you know, the powers that be, family, friends, loved ones, and, you know, using it as a moment to maybe get back out there and figure out how I can do what I was doing and not end up homeless. And what happened was I relapsed 3 weeks into this treatment program, and I had an opportunity to get honest about it, and I took that opportunity, and I had an opportunity to get honest with myself about just how serious and bad things were. And so what ended up happening was 30 days turned into 6.5 months at that program, and then when I left, 3 months at another program here in San Francisco. And at this point in my life, I am not quite, I wouldn't go so far as to say I was happy, but I was committed and dedicated to finding a different path. And I didn't know what that path was going to look like, and I didn't know what I'd have to do to get on that path. But I kind of was beginning to entertain the notion that perhaps life could actually be good. And I leaned, again, just as I leaned on people during this week, I leaned on people, and specifically like our nonprofits here in the city, to kind of help guide me on my way. So I had a lot of needs. I dropped out of high school. I had never been employed. I had some outstanding medical needs. I had some outstanding financial needs. I owed money. I had debts. I didn't know where I was going to live. And, you know, there's a lot of fear and insecurity that came with that. And there still is, to a certain extent, on bad days, fear and insecurity that comes into all these sorts of issues. It doesn't go away. What's changed is my ability and my response and how I handle these issues when they come up. And slowly but surely, and just by taking suggestions from people, like my case managers or my sponsors or the people in my life whose word I valued and respected, I've kind of been able to build something that, again, as I started my show off, is far beyond my wildest dreams or expectations. So these days I have my own apartment, which was huge. I went and completed my GED certificate. I have had the opportunity to work for members of the Board of Supervisors, to serve on committees and commissions to increase and improve the lives of young people who are going through homelessness or going through the criminal justice system. And I've got a job. You know, my previous job, which was amazing, I was at for 2 years. I can't remember anything that I had done for 2 years consistently besides ruin my lives and the lives of people around me. And you know, I had an opportunity that was presented to me at the end of last year that is now I've been at this new position for 6 months, and it truly is the dream job that I never knew that I wanted. For me, in addition to, you know, coming to terms with the trauma that I've experienced and repairing the relationships with my mom and my dad, and my friends, and also creating like a whole new set of like positive and healthy relationships, and really kind of figuring out what that even looks like, because I never really knew what that meant. Today in these rooms, you know, some of my best friends and dearest people on the planet come to these meetings, you know? And that's not really something I had before, but, you know, in addition to all of those things, I will say that I've found one thing that has been the greatest gift that I was never looking for, and that's like a sense of purpose and a sense of belonging, and also the higher power aspect. I'm not really like a God. I use the term God because people understand what you're talking about when you use that word. But for me, it's really just kind of being in the right place at the right time and knowing that no matter what happens, that I will be loved and I will be cared for and I will be taken care of. Which kind of ties into this week. So Monday I get the news. Tuesday I have an after hours work coffee where I'm supposed to meet this person. And I don't want to meet this person. It's not any judgment on them, it's just where I was at. But this is someone who is spoken very highly of by my boss and my other coworkers, and my sponsor, and a lot of people who you know, I take it seriously when these people say these things. So I was like, all right, I should probably go. I should probably talk to him. I should probably be nice to him. I'm going to have to work with him at some point, so I don't want him to feel like I'm blowing him off or any of those things. And what started as a 30-minute coffee conversation sprawled into a 2.5-hour talk that ran the gambit of, you know, our own lives and how they've intersected. And this is someone who is, you know, at face value, you know, we shouldn't be able to relate on a whole lot. You know, we're different age demographics, we're different, we have different professional backgrounds. This person's actually an ordained priest. And that's like where their service to the community comes, is through faith. So not someone who, you know, you would imagine I'd be kicking it in a coffee bar and just riffing on life for 2.5 hours with. And what I walked away from that meeting is a reaffirmed sense of the value of human connection. First of all, in being open to human connection wherever it comes. Most of the times it's in here, but a lot of times it's not as well. And then that feeling, I like to call it the universe itch, of like knowing I am in the right place at the right time with the right people. I wrote this person a thank you card afterwards, and we went far beyond like the professional scope of the conversation and like really kind of went into like who we are as people. And at the end of this conversation with someone who, again, you know, is a pastor, it was almost like a confession moment. It was bizarre. I wrote him a card and I said, you know, I just want to let you know that when we started this conversation, that I didn't know how much I needed to have this. And that's been my experience in recovery, is I do my part, I show up to things. Oftentimes I don't want to do them, I don't feel like doing them. I don't see how on earth or why I should be doing them. And I walk away from those experiences more frequently than not with a renewed sense of perspective and a profound sense of purpose and gratitude. And all of these things probably sound immensely cheesy if you're still new here. I know I heard them when I first started coming around and kind of, you know, I'm a cynic at heart, it's true. And so I'm an eye roller, and I'm a dismisser, and I'm a, you know, I'll do all those things. But I would suggest that if you are new, you know, just be open to the process. That's been it. You know, these past couple months, it's been tough, and it's been tough because I've been doing the things that, you know, I thought that I needed to do versus what other people were suggesting that I probably should do. Again, I think that all of the best gifts that I've had, career-wise, relationship-wise, even the fact that I'm in this room right now, came to be because of accidents and plans that I didn't make, or my plans that I did make that failed. You know, I only started coming to this meeting because one of my best friends at that first treatment program came to this meeting, and I wanted to see them. It wasn't because I went looking for it or really even knew that CMA existed before I walked in the door. It was really because I valued that relationship and I wanted to be able to see this person. And that has led to, you know, a lot of you folks I bother on a regular basis now, some more than others. And a lot of them bother me on a regular basis now, some more than others. And that's great, right? Like, that's a gift that I've been given that I never would have walked into this room had I not kind of followed that one little train. And for me, those roads have been numerous, they've been frequent, and while they aren't always hard, they aren't always easy to see during the moment, part of like my philosophy of who I am now is kind of looking backwards. And a lot of times I don't have that, and tell me to shut up if I need to shut up, thank you, friends. I don't have like that aha moment where I had a spiritual awakening. The spiritual awakening for me has been a past self-reflective of like the journey along the way. And that's where I've really picked up that profound sense of belonging, is through kind of looking through the lens of how I have spent the past couple years. So I'll wrap it up with this. You know, I went through some pretty dark times in my childhood because of things that were put on me. And then I went through some pretty dark times in my teenage and early adulthood because of things that I put to myself. I can honestly say that the best my life has ever been is now. 2018 was a year that was so immensely impactful for me and beyond what I ever thought I would achieve for myself, period. And 2019 is already blowing it out of the water. And so while there have been tough times, and there will continue to be tough times, during the hardest moments I've had in recovery, I have always known that there will be a circle of people who will drop whatever they are doing to help me if it ever gets to that point. And if you allow yourself to really kind of open up to this, you will also have that circle of people, and probably already do, even if you don't know it. So I'm gonna finish up with that. I just wanna thank you for the opportunity to come speak here tonight, and know that you are loved.
The seven traditions, they said.